This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome an old friend of mine, and that is Mr. Jeff Myers. He is the founder of Myers Research, and he has a fantastic software application he developed that he'll probably tell you a little bit about. He is one of the leaders in the field when it comes to real estate market research for home builders, and he's been doing it for a long, long time. I originally met Jeff when he lived in the same neighborhood I did, in West Park in Irvine, California, a neighborhood called West Park, and he had his home up for sale by owner, and I came over and I talked him into listing it with me, and then I sold like five more of his houses in rapid succession. So, Jeff, we've known each other a long, long time, haven't we?
That's right. It's probably been 30 years. So
wow.
It's been a long time, for
wow.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm going with 25 years because I think that was...
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I think... No, it was actually probably about 27 years. Yeah. Oh, you might be more right than me. It's been a long time.
No problem.
Long time. It's good to talk to you, and it's great to have you on the show. What's going on in the market nowadays? What's the outlook at Myers Research?
Yeah, definitely. We've seen, you know, really strong market across the country. Some of the things that we're seeing this year over last year is obviously prices have continued to increase in a lot of the main markets or core markets across the U.S., you know, kind of the smile states. But now what we're seeing is some of the secondary markets are starting to take off as millennials and first-time buyers start to show up at the sales offices. You obviously, rents have continued to increase consistently over the last 5 years, and I think people are getting tired of paying more in rent and starting to look at home ownership.
Mm-hmm. So the millennials really are entering the housing market, huh? I mean, this represents what they talk about is shadow demand. You know, during the Great Recession, we talked a lot about shadow inventory. In other words, the bank-owned properties that hadn't been released to the marketplace yet. But now we have all these Gen Y people that have been living at home much longer than maybe any other modern demographic cohort. They're really coming out to buy, or are they just too saddled with student loan debt to do it in a major way? Or, you know, like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, when you look at the millennials, it's an 80 million in numbers. So it's a big number. They obviously have student debt on average about $30,000, which is more than any other generation. However, one of the things that we really try to see and track is life stage, because that really is what determines when people change their housing preferences. So, for example, first, I think the millennial buys a dog, and maybe they have a girlfriend that becomes a wife, and then lo and behold, they have a child, and now they're starting to look at schools. And since a lot of the core trophy assets in the apartment world are close in urban locations with a lot of great amenities and really premier properties, that's great. But when you have a child, you got to look at schools. And if you look at most of the urban environments, schools are usually not very strong. And so now they've got to go out and look at, gee, we might want to be in a single family home. And we also want to be in a neighborhood where schools are strong. So that lends itself. And once that life change starts to happen, now obviously this group has taken longer to get married, longer to leave the primary house and so forth. So that's why we're seeing it kind of trickling out. But we're starting to see more and more of the big, large home builders target this audience with some success.
So the millennials, what type of like mentality or what type of buyer are they? They really want a single family home, or are they just fine living in high density condo type developments?
Well, I think that they'll accept density, which is a good thing, because that's what they need to accept, especially in a lot of markets to afford.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a lot of them heading out to the third tier markets, you know, where it's an hour and a half commute each way. They clearly want to stay closer in. So we're seeing a lot of product types that the builders are designing that really solve two things. One, they'll have a, you know, bedroom count that's reasonable. You're seeing, you know, contemporary and soft contemporary designs, which appeal to this buyer type. And then you're, you know, again, really higher density, closer in, locations. But again, it depends on their life stage and where they're at.
Good stuff. Well, so what is the general outlook on the market? I mean, are you bullish or is it bear in our future?
We're cautiously bullish on the market. I mean, we think it's been a long economic recovery. However, housing hasn't led this recovery. So when you look at, you know, new home sales activity nationally, we're at about the 50-year average, you know, 600,000 plus or minus. And because of that, you know, we feel like there's still some runway on the marketplace. That being said, prices in some of the core markets have gone up significantly. You know, on average, we see prices in the 20 to 40% above previous peak. And a lot of the coastal, close-in markets to employment have really seen some relatively high increases. That being said, also, though, the suburban markets, we see some runway. They have not kept up. And that's where a lot of the demand is starting to take off. I think there's still some upside in the market.
Yeah, yeah. And when you say that, you're profiling a lot of areas around the country. Tell us about the areas that you cover in your research, because some of the like Midwestern areas, you don't really do work there, right? Or do you?
We do. Our footprint covers about 75% of all new housing. So our footprint is the top markets across the U.S., so we do cover the majority of the new home market.
So one of the things we like to do is segment the markets by the sort of character of them. And we'll say linear markets, cyclical markets, and hybrid markets. Maybe you can help us distinguish this a little bit when you talk about what's going on overall in the market. The cyclical markets are the high-flying markets, the West Coast, South Florida, the expensive Northeastern markets, and the linear markets are almost everything else except for the ones that are in between, that are hybrid like Austin, Phoenix, Dallas, or not Dallas, well, maybe now Dallas is a hybrid market. Atlanta sort of turned hybrid, Denver certainly. And so, you know, the linear markets just chug along and kind of do their thing. No big news either way. The cyclical markets are more like a roller coaster. They have glorious highs. They have ugly lows. You mentioned suburbia, that there was a fairly long runway in terms of home prices because they haven't kept up. Is that what you meant to say?
Yes, absolutely. What you saw was, you know, this is a downturn like no other. Right. I mean, we have never seen house prices, for example, in Las Vegas go down as much as 70%. So that's a once in a lifetime experience that the U.S. has never happened. And a lot of that was driven, obviously, by the mortgages that were faulty. So if you look at the recovery, it's quite different because you had foreclosure rates, you know, at extremely high levels. And so just the recovery is not like any other that we've seen. So when you look at that and you look at how the markets have come back, so your core markets, close to proximity to employment and coastal and so forth, sort of the smile areas, what we've seen is prices have come back more rapidly, and they also did not have as high a foreclosure rate. So because of that, they've acted a little more similar to a normal type recovery. When you get to the inland markets where there's complete disruption and high levels of foreclosure, those recoveries have been like never before because, again, price double-digit price decline has really not happened before. So because of that, the recovery has been much, much longer. The disparity between coastal prices, again, close-in prices versus first and second-tier markets, that disparity in price is huge, as much as 50%, in some cases 100%. And so the idea of drive to qualify is something that we've talked about in the past, but this cycle, that price disparity has been massive, and we finally are seeing a recovery. For example, in markets like Southern California and the Inland Empire, in the outlying markets of Phoenix and Las Vegas, we're starting to see those lower priced markets where foreclosures were really prevalent start to recovery. And the liquidity in that market allows people to move. Because if you're, you know, 50, 60% underwater in your house, you really have no liquidity. You can't do anything.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of people I have on the show, Jeff, talk about the length of the recovery. Then they layer on the business cycle and they think, well, isn't it about time for a pullback? Isn't it about time for a recession? And when we were talking off air before, you were mentioning that this is a pretty long recovery we've had. And I agree with you. Only thing I want to propose and just see what you think of this idea is that since we are, quote unquote, recovering from such a historic low, the worst economy in seven decades during the Great Recession. You know, is it fair to use the beginning of that turn in the market as the start of the recovery, if you're using that as a timeline and going forward, you know, 7 years and saying, well, isn't it about time for a recession? Or is it more accurate to say, hey, the real recovery started in maybe 2012? What do you think about that?
You still have to look at the length of recovery from that time frame. But I want to twist it a little differently, because what I think, when you say the high-flying markets cycle hard, I want to sort of take that out of the equation. Let me tell you why. If you look at house prices, you know, over 50 or 75 years, this is the first time in U.S. history where we've had in one single year a double-digit decline. So if you look at some of these high-flying markets, let's take California, for example, house prices have almost doubled every decade, and they've never gone down in a single year double-digit. So let's say we have an economic slowdown, and we have a, you know, two quarters of consecutive GDP loss, and, you know, we're in a technical recession. I don't believe house prices will decline more than 1 or 2%. So even in the high flying markets, where you can say, because you have to remember what caused this recession was a direct hit from the mortgage market.
Couldn't agree more.
Multi loans,
yeah, right.
Total distress. So that won't repeat. And so you've got to look at prior economic recessions and what did they do to housing.
Right.
And the prior recessions, we never saw 10, 20% house price declines ever.
Right.
So again, you got to look at what caused it. If we can sit here in real estate and say, oh my goodness, there could be an economic recession down the road and what a disaster, we better hold on, you know, tight here. But it's not going to happen. I mean, housing is not going to cause the recession. And so because of that, I don't think you're going to see anywhere near the kind of price declines that we've ever seen in this downturn.
You know, that is a really good point. I mean, the banks have been pretty darn conservative this time around. I mean, to say that, you know, we're going to have this big giant crash and everybody's going to start walking away from their properties, I can't imagine that happening this time. You know, the famous last words of every investor, this time it's different. But it really is different. I mean, look, the loans they were making in 2000, 2002, 2003, you know, up to 2005 were absurd. I mean, you know, with like one day out of prison, a bankruptcy last month, you know, foreclosure yesterday, you could still get a really good loan. I mean, it was absurd what was going on. And that just isn't happening. I mean, these banks are tough now. You know, they are underwriting loans.
This is the lowest default rate on record. You know, the average FICO score for an approved mortgage today is 720, even though they can underwrite them at 680. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a good friend of our company's worked at HUD, and I remember him staying at one of our conferences. We're basically writing no default loans. You know, the only people getting mortgages today, you know, don't need them. And that's really what's happening. And so because the mortgage industry, you know, the regulations are so tough after Dodd-Frank and the changes that mandated, it's really, the underwriting is extremely difficult. And so because of that, you know, we've got a situation where the debt behind these homes is so solid that, you know, that's really all that can really cause a tremendous impact to price, other than obviously demand could slow. So these high-flying markets that we talk about, like in California and, you know, even Dallas today has had significant price increases, as has Denver. You know, again, as long as even if demand weakened, I don't see house prices even coming close to double-digit declines.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're on safe ground there, and the recovery will continue. But I just don't see real estate really getting hugely impacted by this.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the self-driving car, the autonomous car that is coming more rapidly than many have thought? I've often said, Jeff, it's going to be a game changer for real estate. And here's why I say that, because, you know, the three primary value drivers of real estate since virtually the beginning of time have always been location, location, and location. And I'm not saying location will not be important. I'm just saying that one of the things I would constantly say is geography is less meaningful than it's ever been in human history. It still matters, of course. I mean, you know, we don't live in cyberspace. We live in geographical areas. I'm just saying it's less meaningful than it's ever been. And so I can see, and, you know, feel free to disagree with this idea, but my hypothesis is that we're going to see downward pressure on really prime location real estate and upward pressure on lesser prime location real estate, like a resurgence of the suburbs. Because if you can just summon a car and there's no burden to driving anymore, you know, if you can sleep in the car on your commute to work, if you can do work, if you can, I don't know, you could do yoga in the car.
You know, right.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
The self-driving car changes everything. And let me back up a minute, because I think, you know, just seeing the impacts of Amazon and their distribution mechanism and what it's done to the retail industry. The reason I want to highlight that is because we had a seminar recently by Westfield, one of the largest mall owners in the country, and how retail has changed, you know, because of the impact of Amazon. For example, in their parking garages now, they're going 10-foot clearance height because they know those parking garages could become residential units.
Wow.
Or they could become offices. So they're pre-planning today when they build parking garages on the clearance height so they can reuse those garages for something else. So that does a couple of things, right? Because these malls, the only retail malls that are surviving are the A-plus trophy locations.
Right.
Because a lot of retail, as you know, is shutting down. Over 150 million square feet of retail will shut down in the U.S., you know, over the next few years, given what Amazon's impacts have been. So because of that, you've got reuse opportunities. So I think, you know, for number one, I think retail has changed forever. And I think because of that, the suburbs, again, can be strong, but beyond suburbs, like those tertiary markets, really, really the demand will not be there so much in this cycle because there's so many reuse opportunities close in. So the self-driving car has an impact on a number of things. One, it changes, you know, how we park commercial spaces.
Yep, I
agree.
Because
you don't need it anymore. So all those parking garages become reuse opportunities, either for housing or office or other utilities.
Absolutely.
So that's huge.
Yep.
It also changes the design of the house, obviously, because garage is a big component and it drives everything. When you design a new home today, it's all about, do I have a one-car garage, a two-car garage, is 20 feet, and that footprint, everything else wraps around it.
Mm-hmm.
So when all of a sudden you don't have that piece of the equation, boy, it opens up huge opportunities. But don't forget, you know, with the number of households sitting on the ground in the U.S., what a great reuse opportunity for everyone's two-car garage is sitting out there.
Yeah, everybody's going to get an extra bedroom or an extra office.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I would predict that that's going to become a whole cottage industry, remodeling garages.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things you can do with it. So I think, you know, it gets really, really exciting. It changes land planning, you know, the driveway cuts and all these things.
Oh, yeah. It's huge.
It's very, very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. We do need to distinguish, though, just for a minute, is we need to distinguish the on-call self-driving car concept, the Lyft, Uber, rideshare kind of concept, from one owning their own self-driving car. I mean, some people will still own a car.
Right.
It's not like everybody's going to give up their cars in the next day. But yeah, there will be less demand for cars. I mean, I couldn't agree more. Very interesting stuff. Jeff, just kind of wrap it up for us with any closing thoughts you have and give out your website.
There's just a lot of changes. And I think the home building industry as a whole and housing in general is one of the last industries to be disrupted by technology. I think clearly the self-driving car is one of those, but we see a lot of change happening in the industry with respect to, you know, how you transact real estate as far as disruption in construction. And, you know, will there be a 3D printer that builds houses or panelized construction, as we see a lot of the Japanese now are starting to bring their technologies into our industry. We just think there's a lot of home technology that impacts kind of the data collected within the home. As you know, the auto industry now, they feel that the data that comes out of the car is more valuable than the car itself.
Right.
And that's why you've seen Apple and everyone starting to put technologies in cars, but also in the home.
Yeah.
So I think there's just a lot of disruption to take place. And you know, we're kind of keeping our eyes open to say who's going to be the Elon Musk of home building.
Right.
Because I think
there's a
lot of opportunity in an industry that just, you know, we're still building houses with hammer and nails, and it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
As labor is extremely tight and costs have only gone up, and there's got to be a more efficient way to
put houses together.
Yeah. So the building technology is another very, very interesting topic. We had Ali Wolf, your chief economist, or an economist, maybe not chief, with Myers Research, and she was on before, and that was a great interview. Gosh, we'd love to have someone from your group back on, maybe you if we're lucky, to talk about building technology and how that's going to change the industry. That's a fascinating subject in and of itself. Sure. Jeff, give out your website.
MyersResearch.com. We have a product named Zonda, which is a iPad native iOS app that we developed that really looks at every single variable that impacts housing and puts it into a large data warehouse and allows you to analyze the market with a lot of sophistication.
Yeah, Zonda is truly an amazing tool that, I mean, when I've looked at that, I've just been so impressed. It's like a really high-end version of Zillow. So, yeah, great stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job there. All right, Jeff Myers, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.